Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we're going to be discussing a couple of topics. The first one is the Voice of Reason scandal. And there's a little bit going on there, but it does highlight my, you know, frustration with the online Catholic community, and which is experienced in some parts of the Protestant world. We'll kind of get to that later with comparisons, but it is one of those more frustrating things. And then we'll also talk about Mormon witches and how the bros were right the entire time, and it was so obvious, you know, it's so painful being so right. And in this case, it kind of was, because I didn't mean to be this right. I didn't mean to be this right on the video clip that became a fault line on the internet over the last week and a half. I did not mean to be this correct on, you know, how travel was a red flag, you know. So we'll dive into that as well, because, you know, a lot of people wanted a counter signal, and it kind of goes back to one of the earlier discussions we had this month about the Protestia thing, OnlyFans thing. It kind of, like, a lot of people who were on the other side of that issue also remained on the other side of this issue, and it's like, no, this should have been the one to have brought us all together, but it was not. And, you know, I didn't mean to be this right. And that's what we're going to talk about in a minute, but, you know, how are you doing?
All is well.
Here we got some fun articles, I guess, right?
Yeah, so I got some fun cooking in the pipeline.
And you should definitely sign up for the free newsletter. It gives you Christian news in your inbox each and every day. The breaking news on today is that James Dobson has passed away. You know, the guy behind Focus on the Family, back when they were kind of cool. I don't know if they were ever cool, you know, with the kids. But, you know, as far as evangelical institutions go, Focus on the Family is huge deal. Hard to underestimate their influence in the culture of evangelicalism, and, you know, to some degree even at large. So they went downhill without him, and that's kind of my thoughts on that, because Jim Daly kind of sucks. So more positive things to say about James Dobson, and, you know, seeing all the liberals refuse to do like a reverse eulogy of him is kind of good sign that, you know, you did your part. So anyway, let's dive into the first topic, and that is Voice of Reason, who last month was accused of being a PDF file, and he kind of went on a hiatus. He did deny those allegations, you know, at least in between the month where he face these accusations by, I don't want to say they're anonymous accounts, but it's always great when a Me Too story happens because of an anonymous thing. But anyway, they did bring the receipts, which is kind of crucial. And the receipts were saucy. I mean, there weren't any, like, pictures as far as I could tell, but yeah, but then some of them was accused of being with a underage person while he was above the age. So it's a little bit of YouTube speak. But with that said, he was accused of all this, but he only cops to the, you know, he was sexting with women who were all above age. And let's actually judge according to that understanding, because we can, it seems like it's pretty agreeable that the underage allegations have not happened. So, you know, I like to, I don't want to say judge as in condemn, but I like to judge the person based on their own defense. You know, because it's like, okay, this is what the person's copping to what they did. And oftentimes that actually makes it worse. Not so much in this case. In this case, I feel like his apology makes things worse, but that's just my opinion, and we'll discuss that. but I don't know how well you've been following this story.
Not too well. Obviously, I've seen the story. I saw the apology video, which was, you know, not very well received, and I saw some of the reactions to that, and would certainly agree, especially, you know, given what the scandal was, given what he has actually admitted to, and now it's kind of like the opening door to a return to your media career.
Robert says jailbait is clickbait, and oftentimes the case, and I really don't care how he met these girls. These are scorned lovers, as far as I can tell. And you were doing all that. You were a YouTube celebrity. You were a religious minister in some ways. Like, you ran a religious ministry, and you had all these scorned lovers that you gave leverage over yourself. And that's just unwise. And, you know, he makes a comment about thinking that, you know, sin would stay secret, and it did not. Well, it didn't say secret because, you know, you didn't have the class to run the game that you were doing. And these are, at the end of the day, scorned lovers. So they're not going to respect any sort of a down low agreement if it can be to their benefit not to stay on the down low. Because, you know, women don't like to be on the down low. Just as a general rule, it's not what they like. You know, you don't want to be like on the down low in a relationship. That's not what women like to be. So the nature of the text are actually not as bad on an individual basis. Now, the problem is he was a philanderer, and he was doing this to multiple, he was giving multiple women this kind of routine. And I think that's actually the bigger issue. But as far as, you know, let's say that he was, you know, committed to marrying this girl and said some saucy things, but in some of the texts, it's like, you know, I wish we could get married right now. It was kind of like that. Let's say that that was the situation. I think that this, you know, he was, you know, they're in a relationship. Maybe they're like engaged or whatever, and they had some saucy things. Then the marriage is called off and she blows him up for this. I wouldn't think that this would be an issue. I really wouldn't. Not to say that, you know, what he did was super appropriate, but it wouldn't be a scandal. But it is a scandal if you're doing this to multiple women and it's clear you have no intention of marrying any of them. In fact, he went on like Pints with Aquinas and said that he felt that he was called to singleness.
Yeah, which obviously from the nature of the scandal, or just even nature of having a sexting scandal, would imply that you are not called for singleness.
Yeah.
Unless it's as a form of penance.
Yeah, I mean, self-flagellation can be a form of penance too, but that's not, it's not healthy. He's not biblically called to singleness. So, yeah, I read through the screenshots and I'm like, this could have been way worse, but the problem is, first of all, he used his ministry to work, you know, to get it, you know, to do this. And then second, it wasn't just one woman, it was multiple. And he says multiple in the 25-minute apology video. Yeah, a classic, you're the only one for me times 20. Like, yes, that to me is actually what makes this a bigger issue. If this was just like his girlfriend and they said saucy things, but in those saucy things, there was still a, you know, I wish I could marry you so that then you could shove your panties in my mouth. Like, okay, that'd be one thing, but it was, he was doing this like to multiple women.
You literally tell that to everyone.
Yeah, he gives that line to everyone. And no, that's not cool. That's very shady. And yeah, that's why it's a scandal. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that, yeah, you shouldn't be doing YouTube ministry if you do that. So let's dive into his apology video, because this, to me, and his apology video is too slow to do all of it. I'm just going to be very upfront. It's 25 minutes at the most slowest pace that I've ever seen. I don't know if that has to do with, you know, not native English speaker or what, but I clipped it at 2x speed, but we're going to slow down my clip to 0.75, and maybe that balances things out. Maybe that brings some balance to the force. So let's dive right on in. to my clip here, and here we go. Make sure volume's up.
We got out of all of this. And that's what I want everyone else, my audience. Even if you feel like you can't support me anymore, if you feel like you have to walk away, I understand, I totally get it. But I just want everyone to at least know that no matter how deep we are in our sin, no matter how broken we are, no matter how fallen we are, no matter the extent of our misery, God can use those things to bring something good out of them. God can turn those things into something that gives glory to Him. And all that I can do now is offer the situation to God and ask Him to take this, put the situation at the foot of the cross, ask for His mercy, for His grace, and ask Him for healing, not only for myself, but for everyone that I've hurt. And I want to let everybody know that during this past month, even though my audience hasn't heard from me, doesn't know what's going on, I want everybody to know that during this past month, I've grown a lot, I've learned a lot, I've made a lot of really important changes in my life, changes that I should have made a long time ago. Because through God's grace and through the help and the support of my loved ones, my family, I'm now on the path that I should have been on, that we're all supposed to be on the right path, on the path of virtue. Back in November of last year, I was advised by my spiritual father to seek counseling, to go to therapy, and I didn't listen to him because so busy, so many things happening for us, so much traveling, so many things going on that I put it off. Because deep down, I didn't want to go to therapy. I didn't want to have to face my ugliness, my trauma, things that happened to me when I was a child. I didn't want to face those things. And I didn't listen to him. And I should have. But now, with God's grace, immediately after the situation happened, when all of these things came to light, everything stopped for me. The ministry stopped, obviously. Not doing any filming, not traveling. Staying put, my life changed completely in about 24 hours. And I have now been going to therapy every single week to finally deal with the things that I should have dealt with a long time ago. And I'll continue to go for as long as I need to. I thank God for this because everything slowed down, everything stopped for me. And by His grace, I've been able to finally go back to cultivate the prayer life that I used to have. The prayer life that fell by the wayside. And I'm so thankful that through His grace and through His mercy, I now once again have the robust prayer life that we all should have. I'm staying close to my loved ones, to my friends, to people that care about me, people that are holding me accountable. And I'm taking all of the necessary steps to be able to move forward in however it is that God wants me to move forward. And I don't know yet what that's going to look like. I don't know what my future holds for me. All I know is that God has already brought so much good out of this.
So that part at the end, I don't know what the future holds for me after he talked about his robust prayer life that has come about as a result of this scandal. It comes to me, it feels to me that he is trying to test the waters for his return, for a triumphant return, and... You know, he's talking about how he's hurt people. He apologizes for that. He sought self-improvement, which comes in the form of therapy.
Yeah, that to me was more of a red flag than like, that was one. That was the red flag I did not hear about when I was hearing about the, I guess, his response video or apology video, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I didn't hear about the therapy part, which, again, is a red flag.
Yeah, and did he go to counseling or therapy? But apparently, I guess during confession or whatever, he was told to go to therapy. So
I'm not
assuming
sure
that spiritual father was referring to a priest, which is a little bit of an assumption on my part.
At first, I thought he was just talking about confession, which again, I mean, you don't need therapy or whatever. You should just be confessing. And theoretically, in the Catholic, how it works is that's what the confession is for. That's what the priest is supposed to do. Like, going to a therapist talking about your feelings isn't going to actually help you, especially if you're a grown man. Like
Paul calls this the apology video of all time. And yeah, it was a ridiculous apology video. It's 25 minutes. It is the slowest paced video I've ever watched. Like, it feels like he is talking way longer, but which I had to watch it at 2x speed because I'm like, how slow is he going to go? And he's just dragging it out. And for something that seems like a prepared statement, it shouldn't be this slow. So I kind of felt like the slowness was manipulating because there's no way he got 165,000 subs talking that slowly, did he? But when he talks about his robust prayer life, talks about going to therapy, which is, you know...
Again, that's not going to help him. You were literally caught with, like, a sexting scandal. Like, therapy is not an actual...
He has trauma.
Yeah, trauma. That's just playing the victim. Yes. You were a horn dog. You were thinking with your lower member. Like, let's not overcomplicate what was actually happening.
Yeah. Let's not pretend like there's some childhood trauma that said that he needed to... That the only way to make him feel right was to
send news.
You know, well, not send news, but he did send some saucy shirtless pictures and stuff to women. Like, okay, really? That's we're calling that trauma-related behavior? That's insane. You know, it's the psychologizing of sin, if that's a word. You know, we're trying to reduce everything to some sort of pathology or psychosis. It's like, no, it's just evil is evil. And I feel like the apology made things worse. Oh, obviously, okay. he had to say something because he was being accused of, you know, going after of grooming and going after underage women. So he had to say something. But as far as what he did goes, he made that way worse by trying to pretend, play it off as a victim and that he was traumatized. And I do agree with Christian Mario, who's Eastern Orthodox, but nevertheless, he is... a decent follow on the Twitter sphere because, you know, entertaining and stuff. He put out a huge video or a viral video that basically said, you know, he uses ministry to pick up women and for that reason he should not be trusted again. And the response to his response video has mostly been positive by the Catholics. And Christian Mario pointed out, you know, if he was Eastern Orthodox, he'd be harsher. And the only reason he's even talking about this to the extent that he is because the papist community was largely giving him a pass. And that's evident in the comment section that Pints with Aquinas was definitely appearing to give him the pass and some other Catholics as well. But yeah, there are Catholics who were not giving him the pass. I do want to say that also, but it is true. Yeah. A lot of people gave him the pass. And I do think e-Catholicism is a very handy grift. And it just reminds me of that because what's-his-face, homeboy, voice of reason, doesn't want to lose out on that grift. He realizes he messed up, but he does want to get his foot back in the door because, you know, what other skills does he have?
Landscaping.
I was thinking roofing, but... He's short, and maybe he used to be fit, so...
A jockey? Is that what
maybe, no, maybe being a roofer wouldn't be a bad... Was all that came to mind. But anyway, I'm just saying. Although he used to be fit in some of these saucy pictures that he sent, he kind of looks like a skinny fat right now.
I mean, if he's fit, he can sign up for ICE. He has a career option on the table.
There you go. He can sign up for ICE.
He doesn't even need to learn the Spanish.
Exactly. Mia Moore. VOR is literally a 2 Timothy 3:6 guy. I don't have that reference off the top of my head. So that's kind of what made this story to me was this apology that I thought made the situation worse than it should have been. And the Catholic community's response to it, which was, you know, clapping like seals. And it's like, yes, there's forgiveness, but also there's consequences. And some of the e-Catholics out there are like some of the biggest grifters. and I don't think their faith is really genuine. And like, even they're just, you know, doing it to be on YouTube and stuff like that. And I'll name names in a second, but I'll let you chime in.
I mean, you would think, you know, a lot of people go into that Catholic, if they're going into that Catholic sphere, you think, you know, a lot of these people would be harsher on one of their own when in that situation, just because it might benefit them. If, you know, even just on like a earthly standpoint, it benefits them that to have one of their competitors go down in flames. And then you, by being firm on it, you get people to your audience that want someone that speaks boldly on an issue.
Yeah. So the name that comes to mind as far as like using the e-Catholic community to grift, I mean, there's a few of them, but let's name multiple names because it's coming to my head now. Cameron Bertuzzi, first of all, let me just say, if I wanted to get a lot of followers and maybe extra Patreon subscribers, I think I could net maybe if I just wanted to milk a conversion to Catholicism. And before I convert, I would have to say that I'm exploring the issue first. Hype it up. And then slowly, you know, leave a little trail of breadcrumbs that this is the direction I'm going in. And then announce, bam, I am converting. I am coming home. And I could gain a lot of subscribers doing that. I could, you know, on Patreon, on my Patreon-like system at evangelicaldarkweb.org that you should check out. Or, you know, on YouTube itself, proper. But yeah, capturing griftianity. Yes. That's Cameron Bertuzzi. I think he was insincere because he was a liberal Protestant. Like, I don't think, you know, he was, you know, really just a William Lane Craig level apologist. And so there's nothing really there. But what's the way to put it? So when he converted to Catholicism, like, yeah, we didn't really lose anything on the Protestant camp, but I do think it was a grift. Like, he was talking about how he was losing money doing YouTube, which, as someone who does YouTube, is, I think, very hard to do. It's very hard to lose money doing this. The operating expenses are so low. I mean, look at this. I did upgrade my microphone this year, but I'm still running with the same $70 webcam that I've had for like 5 years or whatever, you know? So very hard to lose money. And, you know, actually, as far as YouTube goes, the only thing I really pay for on a monthly basis is Restream, which is what we're streaming on. That's the only thing that really costs money to do. Everything else is open source and free. So how Cameron Bertuzzi was talking about losing, you know, thousands of dollars a month, very difficult to do. But, you know, he needed to milk the threat of going under to get donations. And, you know, that's a selling strategy. So, and it worked for a time. The other example I want to bring up is, oh man, what's her name? The person who calls himself a hillbilly on social media. They had a cup of coffee at Joel Webbin's church, so people attacked them for going there. I forget what her name is, but hillbilly something. She's one of those e-girls, you know, so very catty. And she milked a conversion to Catholicism as well. And just a small scale example, you know, I guess if you followed the whole patriarchy Hannah thing and you were like in those cat fights, you would know who I'm talking about. But that is,
luckily, I barely know.
Yes. Yeah. I actually patriarchy Hannah followed me, but I didn't follow her back. But you know, cause I was not into the whole cat fights and the e-girl thing as well. But yeah, there's a few e-girls that have converted to Rome. Yeah, hillbilly things. Yeah, thank you, Romans 8 Shaman, for the W there, for the assist. Because that's, yes, you all know. They had a cup of coffee at Joel Webbin's church, and, you know, they lived in Texas for like several months, but only visited maybe 4 times at most. But people tried to string them as like members of his church that were going to Rome. And it's like, no, it's literally, they lived like an hour away and weren't very committed to visiting. And yeah, people milk that grift because it exists. The Catholic community is very trusting. I think they're very trusting, and it reminds me of prosperity gospel followers. That's what it reminds me of. You know, imagine the guy that cheated on his wife for like the second time and is now being restored to ministry. Who's that? It's a black pastor I'm thinking of out of, I think it's like John Gray. Like, there's someone that I'm thinking of that totally describes what?
Probably multiple. But yeah, I mean.
So, yeah. There is that sense of, oh, God's forgiven them. They can go back to doing what they are doing. And that exists most in the Protestant side. That exists mainly in the prosperity gospel camp. And that's interesting that the Catholicism side of things, which Catholics often, historically speaking, they have had to wrestle with a hyper asceticism and imposing like monasticism. And then on the flip side, they've had to wrestle with the fact that these bishops are raking in so much cash and it looks very bad. So they've had to wrestle with both of these extremes for a long time, like before the Reformation and stuff like that. So that's kind of baked into Catholicism that they've had to have that wrestle. But, you know, so it's funny that the prosperity gospel camp is where a lot, you know, they have the same tendencies of being overly trusting towards people who have messed up a time or time again.
I wonder if it has something to do with whether or not how the Catholic Church perceives like fornication and adultery within their priesthood compared to like marriage. Because I recall I think it was Church and that described the Catholics believe that, you know, marriage is worse than like fornication for a priest. Because, you know, if you get married, you can't be in the priesthood. But if, you know, you do a little fornicating with a prostitute on the side, then, you know, it's bad, but you're not necessarily disqualified bad. Or at least that was how it was in his day. So I don't know if there's like a lingering effect to where, you know, because how they treat fornication versus marriage within their own priesthood, whether that translates to any of these scandals or not.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I've definitely never thought of. Because, you know, I haven't done the reading. I'm like so busy doing that I can't do any reading. And the other thing is I struggle to read non-enemy media. Like, I struggle, like, I haven't picked up Joe Rigney's book in months. And it wasn't even, like, boring to me. It's just I have very little motivation to read something, you know, material that's on my side of debates and stuff like that. And I haven't had to read anything opposition related in a little bit of time. Actually, since the Amanda Tyler book, I haven't read anything opposition related since then. So, yeah, he does the reading for me in most cases, especially as it relates to the reformers. So, with that said, the other extreme is the Protestant, like in the Reformed Protestant world, I think we are like the Catholics and prosperity believers, I think are way too like forgiving of past mistakes. And by forgiving, I don't mean the eternal sense, but I mean like they will just pretend like it didn't happen and ignore consequences of earthly sin. But I think there's also the sense on the opposite side, like we exist in the world where there's sort of more of a crab in the pot mentality, and in some cases there is a lack of moving on from things that should be moved on from. I'll give one example I would say is Pete Hegseth, whereas, you know, I've seen comments in YouTube videos that I've done, I think, or on the website or on social media when I post about Pete Hegseth. The guy has a messy past, right? And there might be people in our camp that would not be willing to move on from that, even though he is a public official. He's not actually trying to do a ministry or anything like that.
Yeah, he's not even a pastor. And he gets attacked for, because I think he has, what, one or two divorces, maybe a little side dish of adultery back in the day. Like, yeah, he has a, you know, a past. And, you know, if you look at him, no homo, but, you know, you can, probably not a surprise that, you know, that past involves a lot of women.
Yeah. I was going to say it was the tattoos that could tell you that. He was a little rougher around the edges. But at the same time, he's probably the best person that can evangelize Trump because of that relatable past. So definitely be mindful about that when you're praying for the president and his faith. Because it's possible that Donald Trump is like a baby nascent Christian. And, you know, Donald Trump made some comments earlier in this week about heaven and, you know, trying to, like, earn his way into heaven. Because, honestly, I think Donald Trump, you know, it's, first of all, good that he's kind of orienting himself to eternity, like, things that are eternal. I think that's a good thing for Donald Trump. But, second, I think, you know, he knows that he's screwed up a lot in this life. And, you know, that gets on him. And, you know, that's something to lean into, not something to scoff at.
Yeah, especially given, you know, a lot of people might have said, let's just say 5 years ago, or, well, let's go before 2020, back to like 2017 Trump. Oh, he's so brash. He's never thought he's done anything wrong. You know, the ego in this guy. Like, that used to be a lot of the, let's just say, Christian opposition to Trump.
Yeah. And the Christian opposition, which, and Trump's actually a great example of this, of someone whose past sin is continuously held against him. Even though, first of all, he hasn't committed adultery while president or even on the campaign.
Yeah, we're talking this entire time. 2007, like before Obama was president, was when the Stormy Daniels thing allegedly went down.
Right.
Obviously, you can talk about the tape with him and talking about what he could do, not what he actually did with Billy Bush in 2016.
Yeah, you know,
locker room talk, which, you know,
I didn't really care about.
Yeah, for better or worse, is, you know, probably consistent with locker room talk, but
and is consistent with what women do to rich people. Let's be real; they throw themselves at him. Women threw themselves at Trump, and I totally believe that they did that. That's what Trump was talking about in those tapes.
So you're basically saying, yeah, these women are like dripping for me. It's just like,
I totally believe that.
Yeah, you're rich. You're, you know, you got good genes in like the Sydney Sweeney sort of way.
I mean, he's,
again, no homo, but
yeah. And yeah, I didn't really see that. But people will look at Trump and say, because of what he did in the past, his character's, you know, marred versus, you know, like someone like a John McCain, who was a complete dirtbag in the present. And then someone like a Mitt Romney, who is definitely a psychopath as far as politics go. And had a horrendous political record. So they're like, oh, Trump's character is beyond the pale, but I will support these two because, you know, their sins are with smooth words. So yeah, and that is something that happens in evangelicalism. Now, Catholics, there's just a large contingent of liberals. That's why they didn't vote for Trump en masse. The same way even, but evangelicals still voted for Trump en masse. And were the most profound religious bloc voting for Trump. So yeah, the Trump and Hegseth are great examples of this point. Remember, of course, I'll bring up a pastoral example, like the Joel Webbin thing that broke like earlier this year about his past sin. Well, it's like, yeah, there were mistakes that were made there and how that was handled, but you can't really just disqualify someone who submitted to their elders and, you know, did not commit that sin again or anything even close to that sin again a decade later. So,
you know, or use the because he was a professing Christian, therefore, you know, he's disqualified forever, even though, you know, again, we're talking about a guy that had sex with his girlfriend at the time. Like, that's such a, I won't say a very common situation in this day and age, but you might be without any sort of, I don't know, pastoral candidates if you use that as a measuring stick for orthodox or for pastoral eligibility. That if you had sex with your girlfriend, you're disqualified.
I do wonder how we're ever going to, the whole pastoral vacuum that's going to come open. Like they say, there's way more pastoral needs and pastoral candidates.
Yep, they also want to keep planting churches.
And they also don't want to pay pastors more. So it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting dynamic. You're never going to raise your best men in the church because if you don't pay enough, because they're not going to leave their jobs to make substantially less money and take care of a family. So it's a rough go. And oftentimes I feel like the seminarians are like the worst. Just saying, like they're not who you want in charge.
There certainly was a wave of that, but I do think the more recent years, that crop is seemingly good. Again, all the stuff we're seeing with Gen Z, that's in the seminaries too. They know that the Christian nationalists are in the seminaries, which is why, you know, again, the Presbyterians went after this hard. Southern Baptists haven't really done a whole lot, but at the same time, very limp-wristed overall as a denomination. But yeah, they know this stuff is in the seminaries. They know Doug Wilson's in the seminaries.
Yeah, I guess that's a helpful way to put it. Now, was it Trouble Woe if Stone Choir put out a thing saying, like, the one place in the church you're not seeing a mass of right-wing men is in the church? I don't know if that's your experience.
No.
So that's not your experience. I said...
Again, I'm not saying people don't hide their power levels in the church setting. Do I necessarily go into the church and say, hey, 1360 baby all day long, 1360. No, I don't just go to church and talk about 1360. I don't go to church and talk about the 1940s event. It doesn't necessarily come up in conversation.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't talk about, the Civil War and, or conspiracy theories about Lincoln and the 1864.
I've had a couple conversations about like ayahuasca and stuff like that at church. But as far as like, being like the base right wing anon, I haven't gathered any of that from people that are in church, but in my church and all that, just gauging, like, I don't like inquisition them on how base they are. Like, it just doesn't really come up. You kind of talk about normal things like kids, wives, stuff like that comes up more in the local church, and stuff that the church is doing, like, if we're working on things. So that's, I guess, my experience is it's more, I don't want to say small talk, because it's not, I talk a lot about business at church. So that would probably be, I guess, outside of like family life and stuff like that. Like, I don't necessarily talk about, I don't try to, base inquisition people on how base they are. Okay. I just don't. So I can't really say I have a whole lot of data to report on that. Like, okay, this person listens to Al Mohler's The Briefing, or, some people like Tim Keller, even though I think the guy's a false teacher, there's stuff like that.
I do try Tim Keller people, Keller pill people.
I did Bonhoeffer pill some people. Like, yeah, this guy denied the Apostles' Creed. So there is some of that. Like, you don't want to move too fast in church. And, I'm not a dispensation. I'm openly not a dispensationalist in the church.
Again, going to Presbyterian church. Yeah, you can talk about the dispensational stuff. And a lot of negative opinions about that form of theology, and you can a little bit of a wedge to.
Yeah, I mean, so those are some, like, I can do stuff like that, but I'm not here to cause a problem or draw attention to myself, because I'm modest. I'm a modest person. I'm not showing my man boobs, my lack of man boobs. I'm not trying to show off myself, and I'm not trying to really draw attention to myself. So, and the person who brought up Bonhoeffer wasn't me. So I said, it was like the movie. It was around the time the movie came out. I'm like, I've done a lot of research on Bonhoeffer, and I don't really think he's a Christian for these reasons. And yeah. And they were kind of like, huh. So let's move on to our next topic, which is about Mormon witches. So this is something that came up, dissident conversations, and the bros were right. And I just wanted to acknowledge that. Can we just acknowledge that the bros were right? And it's kind of also what I think is going to happen to Mormon women in mass, because I believe that Mormons are completely cooked.
Okay.
Now, let me actually answer that, because I was actually listening to Will Tanner's show today, and you know, he actually asked the question about the Mormons. Now, again, I don't think his guest gave a great answer. I think he was being a little too, I won't say materialistic in his answer, but yes. And he kind of fails to realize that, you know, there's nothing undergirding Mormonism as a religion, because the Mormon apologetics is just so atrocious. Like, again, the stuff you have to believe in order to be like LDS is historically unproven. You know, it's very
disproven, not just unproven.
Yeah, disproven. You know, you're talking about Indians converting and, you know, a bunch of archaeological evidence that's never been produced. And of course, again, the well-known life of Joseph Smith.
And that's before you get into the fact that there's a lot of Mormon outlaws. Now, to their credit, there were like Mormon militias that fought in the Mexican-American War. Kind of a cool fact that, you know, I'm trying to like.
Oh, he actually talked about. He actually mentioned that there's a lot of sympathy for the polygamous sex of Mormons within their community. So there's a little bit more of an underground sympathy for those polygamous sects. Like, it's almost like they like the old way.
I mean, that'd be the way to keep the men in line or in with it. But you're going to easily run out of quality women in Mormonism, because I just think that there are two religions that have the same origin story that I think are kind of cooked in the 21st century. I do think Mormonism is cooked. Even politically, their best days are behind them as far as being a remotely useful political bloc.
Yeah, because they're going the opposite way of like just white people overall. Yeah. White people overall is trending more conservative. Mormons are not.
Yeah, Mormons actually had a great starting position, but they're actually sliding to the left because they already started out really far to the right. So they only have one direction that they can conceivably go. Like, are they really going to do a 90-10 split? No, they're actually going to start sliding back to 80-20, to 75-25, to, you know, 65-35 or whatever. So I think the Mormons are actually going to slide in the liberal direction because they don't believe what they actually do believe. They just believe in being nice, and they're going to get longhoused into being liberal.
Yeah, and this kind of goes to what was talked about on Will Tanner's show. Is that, you know, they got a very homogenous group, so that's why that they're very united and very strong as a group. But again, I don't think the reason that it's falling apart is because of more sociological trends or inevitabilities of you become too in-group, which then leads to you start kind of accepting a couple out-groups.
Okay,
that it naturally dissolves. I think it's because, you know, I think it's because the metaphysics of their religion is just untenable.
I can't think of a single Mormon that I knew growing up that is conservative to this day.
Yeah.
I can at least think of two examples that are, I think they were kind of always liberal, but they're definitely, actually one of the Mormons, I remember him saying this to me, I wish I wasn't white. Yeah. I mean, was this just about affirmative action and trying to get accepted into college? I don't know, but it stuck with me that he said that. And the other became a lesbian and is married.
A lesbian?
Yes.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
I think I recall we talked about this person going in that direction. I didn't know about the marriage part.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, bring a gift, right?
Bring a gift. According to Alistair Begg, you should go to that wedding and bring a gift. Yeah. So the other thing is there's not that many Mormons on the, you know, the new, I don't want to say the new Christian right, if we're including Mormons, but like even
dissident
like the
right.
Dissident right or whatever, there's not really a whole lot of Mormon in that.
I mean, so, I know there's like, I won't say Groyper Mormons, but you know, Mormon maybe
Groypers are you?
Like Kai Schwemmer is one of them. I don't quite know.
Isn't he like the guy that just gets clowned in debates?
Probably, but. And again, I mean, one thing about the Mormons is they have a lot of, let's just say, wacky sexual mores. where it's just like, I guess they believe certain, like it's only sex if there's actually, I guess, friction, so to speak. And then, so that leads to a lot of, let's just say, attempts at loopholes to get around the prohibitions on premarital sex.
I did not know this.
Yes, they got a lot of whack stuff in that community.
All right, let's roll tape. This is the clip that broke the internet.
I'm Riley. I'm 24. I'm from Houston, Texas. And honestly, I'm down for any good adventure. I just got scuba dive certified, and I'm planning to go to Australia this summer, so I'm super excited about that. And then I just picked up skiing like 2 years ago, and I honestly love any themed party. Like, those are like my favorite things to go to, my favorite things to plan. And I'm looking for someone that wants to be my adventure buddy, and it's someone that I can trust in and is going to be there for me.
Aww. Okay, any gentleman would like to get to know Riley more, please step forward.
They're nervous.
There's come on,
there's anyone.
Come on.
Hey, Riley, we're going to have you sit down, but thank you for introducing yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
The men didn't bite on that, and I think it's very obvious why they did not bite on that.
Yeah, I mean, the travel girl, the adventure buddy. There's also the mention of the themed parties, which... And again, even just the notion that you're going on a vacation soon, which basically means, okay, you're going to be indisposed. And again, Australia is not exactly... Well, at least, especially on the East Coast, Australia is not exactly a friendly... time zone shift as far as communication goes, because our workday ends when theirs begins. Or at least that's how it works where I work.
Paul was watching, so maybe he can correct you.
Well, yeah, it's still, I mean, again, it's 9 o'clock here, so it's like, what, midday there? Or maybe afternoon there. So
it's in the future.
Our day, like our workday, like our 9 to 5 ends when their workday begins. So from a business perspective, you know, the overlap between Australia and East Coast America is not friendly at all. So again, you're going on a trip, which means you're not actually interested in starting or really committing to a relationship until that trip or whatever is done. So you're already putting a deferment on when any action for the relationship could actually begin. And again, I see this all the time on the apps. Give me, because I think Hinge has one prop. It's like, give me travel advice for insert location here that they're going to. And the travel girls, just like, okay, you're just saying you're going on some trip. Okay, whatever. But
and what do you think the reason is that they're going on the trips? Just for fun? Just for social media validation?
I mean, obviously, like, the Instagramification of our society does contribute to a lot of trip going. I do think there's a lot of YOLO, you only live once mentality that leads to the trips. You see that on financial audit with these people in credit card debt. That's one of their most common excuses for why they're doing the vacations and the frivolous spending that they're doing.
And how many of those people go on that show and they still have an upcoming trip?
Yes. And, so yeah, I think a lot of that is you only live once mentality, and they're spending their savings now when they should be in storing it for the future.
Yeah. And so there's a lack of delayed gratification, and there's just so much. The travel girl is there. She's not unique, first of all.
No.
And single guy has encountered a lot of her. So there's nothing unique about her. Oh, she has all these cool interests. She's so much cooler than these guys. And that's what the tweet that posted that video clip said, that she's way too cool for any of you guys. It's like, no, she's a dime a dozen, first of all. And second of all, she doesn't sound confident in being cool.
Her voice isn't a great... And again, that clip is...
It says, I'm nervous.
Is cut in such a way that you don't see that there's a veil between them. It also, I think, skips a couple seconds to make it look like they're more mocking her than they actually are in the actual video.
Right. So it's important to know they're not judging her based on looks. They did not reject her based on how she looked. And I'm going to get some hate for saying this, but she's above average in that pack if she were to dress nice. She dressed intentionally ugly. Those are the worst pants ever. Like, what she's wearing as a vest is stupid. She's from Texas, and no, does not. She decided not to dress like a cowgirl, instead dressed like a hippie. Like, it's embarrassing how she dressed for that occasion. Same criticism would apply to many of the guys there that were poorly dressed.
Yeah, I mean, but you got again, George Costanza jacket.
Yeah, we're not judging. They're not being judged based on how they dress or look. And, you know, she actually dressed nicely. Like, the red hair is like the best thing going on. Because red hair is a fetish and guys are into that. So, yeah, that would give her a premium in like the looks department. And she does not use it hardly at all. Or she does everything to make herself look ugly. When I think she's actually not naturally, I think she's naturally pretty. And again, I'm saying this, there's no lust in me acknowledging that, by the way. But I do think if you're going on a dating show, you should dress nicely.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
don't dress like a hoe. Like, dress modestly and be attractive. Like, that's,
or just wear jeans that are a little tighter. Like, come on,
don't wear jeans at all. Wear a sundress. Like, there's obvious solutions to this, and she's like the worst dressed one there. And I think she'd be, so it's not even a looks thing. She's being judged solely on her personality and delivery of her personality. And her personality is all travel hobbies.
And again, all of it's expensive. Again,
yes. We said this was a red flag at the time, and guess what? People wanted to counter signal this, and
already heard a little about me.
People wanted to counter signal this, and guess who was right? Ooh, we'll try it like this. Let's go back to this way. So this is the follow up clip compiled by our friend Defiant Baptist, who might be somewhere in the chat as we speak, and here we go.
I'm Riley. You already heard a little about me, but I'm 24 and I'm from Houston, Texas. But yeah, I really like to travel and I like doing fun things outdoors and being able to try new adventures. And I'm Sheridan.
What does your ideal weekend look like?
I think really depends on the season. Like in the winter on Friday nights, like I want to go skiing, and then on Saturday I want to spend time like with my friends and with my family and like doing anything.
I would like.
So already you see in that clip, travel is her personality.
No, like, it's a substitute for a personality.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like how people have pronouns in their bio as a substitute for a personality, like same thing, except with travel this time. So.
To couple up with Alyssa.
Okay, ladies, tell me what is like one of the funnest things you did in like the past month or so?
Okay, I'm Riley, it's me again. Yesterday, me and my friends threw a party, and it was a witch party, and so we lit the whole apartment with candles, and then someone gave a presentation on different things, but one of them was, like, how to hex someone, and then someone did how to, like, avoid getting cursed by mythical creatures, and it was just really funny and really fun.
All right, I'm gonna go with Sheridan. Big G's.
All right, I know that part was cut, you know, because we didn't hear what the Sheridan girl said, but man,
we didn't need to. We didn't need to.
No, she disqualified herself there. And by the way, the people who made that video, Defiant Baptist, made this very clear. The people who produced this show were the ones who put the Harry Potter music in there and the emoji. He did not do that. The show did that.
I mean, there's just so much cringe about.
It started with the candles.
Harry Potter.
It wasn't a Harry Potter It wasn't a Harry Potter party. It was a witch party, and they're actually learning about witchcraft at the party, and they got their candles, and they probably have a Ouija board. It's like, man, that was her idea of shooting her shot to impress a mate. And yes, Mormons can apparently be witches, because guess what? This next part is going to be super ironic with the Mormon faith involved. So this guy says he's a big Jesus guy.
This guy, so I got to know, what's your favorite scripture?
It's in 2 Nephi 4. I don't know what verse it is, but it says, "My God has been my support. He has led me through my afflictions in the wilderness, and he has preserved me upon the waters of the deep."
Are you reading off something?
No, I have memorized. And the end of it is, he has filled my soul with his love. And I think that in a time of my life that was really hard, that was something that like meant a lot to me. And it's something that I have memorized because of that.
That's cool. So thanks for sharing that. Okay, this is hard. All of you sound like wonderful human beings. I'm gonna couple with Jordan.
Okay.
All right, so I thought even her life verse, I'm gonna use that term even though she was quoting the Book of Mormon, was a travel verse. That was a verse about travel, or at least that was definitely her verse, because it was clearly applicable in the sense of, in the case of travel. So
I didn't even think of the deep lore of, even her Book of Mormon verses were travel related. Yes. I was just like, wow, I was more wondering. It's just like, is that verse about something?
Is about God being her adventure buddy.
Well, I was thinking, it's like, is that verse in its context about Moses, or is that about, sailing to America and like encountering the wilderness of America? Like, I'm just wondering, what was the context of that verse in its original context? Because it's almost like it takes Moses language and the Exodus language. And I'm like, is it in the Exodus context, or is it in the LDS origin context?
No idea. I always think it's ironic because, you know, what's funny is, you know, there were groups that landed in North America after the Mormons said that the Israelites did. But, you know, like, they're like the Aztecs. So what's funny is they didn't bring their, you know, those were all more advanced civilizations. Like, the Israelites were more advanced than any of the Native Americans were. And yet they didn't bring any of their technology with them. And let alone human innovation. I think it's very interesting. That's also kind of the case with the Aztecs when they arrived. It's like, okay, they came from somewhere else but didn't bring any of their technology with them. I just think it's weird. But yeah, the human history is a largely forgotten thing. So this is her self-reflection. And you just got to check out what she thinks the problem was.
I think every girl kind of feels this at one point in their life, but they're like, what's wrong with me? Like, I think I'm a very independent person and very confident, so I think I give that vibe off. And so I feel like not everyone likes that, but like, I do want to meet someone, and I know it's going to happen, but I'm just waiting for the time. I say shoot your shot. Send me a DM. My Instagram is Riley. Now listen to the spelling. This is important. R-Y-L-I-E Kate 01.
I guess 01 is a reference to her birth year.
I will not be giving her DM, just for the record.
Well, So here's the thing. She's like, "Oh, I'm a confident woman.
I'm a strong, independent woman, but I am looking for a man."
Yeah, and here's the thing. First of all, no, she does not sound confident at all. She sounds like someone who struggles with crippling anxiety. But I'm gonna, you know, we gotta account for the fact that she's on camera and people get nervous on camera and stuff like that. So she might sound more jittery than she would normally be. But her voice inflection says, "I'm anxious." And I think that's her natural voice would sound somewhat more anxious than the average person's. On camera, it's super jittery, super nervous, super I struggle with anxiety in like a, we talked about psychologizing everything earlier in that sort of way. Like, not to say get on my level when it comes to stress, but I don't think the average person could handle my level of stress. In fact, you know, my baseline's so high that when my baseline's been elevated this week, it took me a while to realize that. It's like, oh, I'm like always feeling stressed. Mm-hmm. But I'm not like crippling anxiety about it. But anyway. With that said, you know, she thought, hey, it's a confidence issue. It's like, no, there are women that get rejected on these dating shows because they're too confident and boastful even. It's like, I need a man who's ambitious. You know, like the balloon pop show, I remember seeing a clip, actually around the time that I saw that clip, where it's like all the men popped their balloon because they didn't like her attitude. And these were all black men on a black woman, by the way.
Yeah, because the balloon show is a black show, more or less.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, more or less. They're mostly black on that show.
And I thought it was odd because when I made the travel girl comment, like there was a lot of women who disagreed, but it was a lot of black people who disagreed. I'm like...
Well, like, yeah, but that's not to say there's a proclivity towards high time preference and, you know, a proclivity against the idea of delayed gratification. Yeah, you know, gotta get on that Carnival cruise, you know?
Like, I just thought that was so ironic because it's like, no, I think of, actually it's like, maybe it's like a snow bunny thing where, you know, they wouldn't like that in a black woman having that level of confidence, as she would call it, talking about, you know, demanding an expensive date, essentially. And, you know, but in a white woman, they're more tolerating it, I guess.
Because
it's weird because it's like I see, you know, women, you know, like the balloon show that we just referenced. I've seen clips of that. And it's like they didn't like her attitude. And it's like, wow, they rejected the attitude. Her for attitudes, like you don't see the same level of discontent. Like I guess maybe certain things don't translate across racial lines. I don't know.
I think the entitlement complex in women does, but you know, that's just me.
But it, like, for one group of people to recognize it, not others to recognize it. Like she's a super expensive and she has no and maybe she's rich. That's like your best case scenario is she comes from a rich family and is spoiled.
Yeah. And that's how she's able to afford it all. Cause again, the worst case scenario is she's taking out debt to go to Australia and scuba dive or whatever.
Has
or
already taken out debt to go skiing.
Or has zero in savings because she spends all her disposable income on these vacations. Again, you know, as the guy that can afford to go scuba diving in Australia multiple times over, if he wanted to. That's the reason I can afford to is because I don't. Like, it's kind of like, you know, I make wise decisions with my money now, so I can afford to.
What's the Dave Ramsey line? Something about live the best life later, you know. It's something along the lines of eat hot dogs now so you can eat steak later. I think it's some other writer, but it's the same mentality. It's the same... You know, Dave Ramsey financial advice. I mean, really, most financial advice is the same.
Yeah, it's because you don't afford it now, you can afford it later. Like,
right.
Again, time preference.
Right. And most young people don't know that. And I think part of it is they're trying to have the same lifestyle that their parents and that they grew up with. Others, like, you'll see a lot of this, and maybe, you know, our ginger Mormon witch is the thing, is that she's trying to live the childhood she didn't have. Like, you see a lot of Disney adults. Oh, I never went to Disney growing up. It's like, who cares?
Yeah, but the problem with, I mean, she doesn't look like a Disney adult because she, I mean, if she was a Disney adult, she would have a lot more poundage because, again, there's a...
That's true.
There's a low sense of impulse control, like almost like a toddler that wants to keep eating the junk food that is embodied in the Disney adult, which is pretty ironic given a lot of the lessons that come from Disney movies, but they don't seem to grasp the lesson. You know, it's kind of like you think Hakuna Matata, even though that's the opposite of the lesson from The Lion King.
Yeah, it's the opposite of the story's message, but people think that that's the message of the movie.
Or they'll reference it or they'll say it, even though, again, that's not what the movie means. In fact, it means the exact opposite.
Yeah. So there's a lot of media literacy, but also, you know, Disney's kind of a girl's brand.
Now.
No, I think historically it's like, you know, the Disney Princess catalog. So they were kind of a girl's brand. And then when they bought boy brands like Star Wars or the MCU,
I think
they turned them into girl movies.
No, they became a girl's brand, I would say, in the 90s.
Disney Renaissance.
Yeah, after the Disney Renaissance. Because, again, I mean, if you look at a lot of people like the Hercules movie, that's certainly male-driven. Aladdin is certainly more male-driven.
It's a more male-friendly princess
Lion King
movie.
So again, they completely go into princess movies in the 2000s.
It's kind of funny that they had the perception of being a girl's brand, but now, you know, now they definitely are. So I don't understand the Disney World obsession that people have. What IP do they have that is so good that you got to see a theme park devoted to it and pay thousands upon thousands of dollars to do it?
I mean, Star Wars could have been that.
Could have. Certainly not anymore, and that's the part of their theme park that lost a lot of money. So, I'll do a last call for questions because we covered the topics that we wanted to talk about. But all the people that said she's such a cool girl, or how dare you insinuate there are all these red flags based on this clip? I told you so, and you know, AD Robles put out like something about, you know, It hurts, you know, something about, you know, I carry the burden of being this, you know, so right all the time, you know, something like that.
Someone like AD, who lived the materialistic New Yorker lifestyle. I mean, again, he doesn't see it in The Travel Girl, but I'm sure.
No, he does see it in he did.
I'm sure
that's
he
what
saw
he
it
about
in
his
the New York foodie. So there's another angle that's probably more specific to New York. I mean, you see a little.
No, but he talked specifically about The Travel Girl, and he knew this 20 years ago.
Yes,
he's ahead of the times.
But he also, the flip side is the local foodie that he would see, especially being in New York. He would see the girl that would say, "Oh, I want to try this new restaurant in this one part of the city." Like, I mean, you see a little bit of that in the DC metro, because, you know, DC girls. A lot of that in there of, you know, the new spot for this. So, I mean, yeah, that is the flip side. Again, it's all materialism. It's all being a consumer. It's not long-term, low time preference. It is live for now. And that's basically why it's a red flag for travel. It is live for now mentality. And again, you know, women do, and again, it goes back to the OnlyFans thing, you know, viewing marriage as a financial bailout for your poor decision making in your 20s. Oh, you know, you spent all the money on traveling and vacations, so you didn't really build it up to save for family one day. Well, you got married, so it doesn't matter anymore. Oh, that student loan debt, you can just kick it down the road. You know, you got to go to Greece or whatever. And right. You know, that's the chart of like men with student loans and then women with student loans from that 2009 cohort.
Yeah, what's interesting, and Trump put the kibosh on certain student loan practices. They're becoming a lot more conventional in how they get paid back. So, a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. I hope we had some fun. That's really all I got for today. Actually, I will end. Didymus said, foodies without children. Well, sometimes they get food babies, if you know what I'm saying. But anyway. I think that's all we got for tonight. My name is Ray. This is Anthony. This is the Evangelical Dark Web. If you like this, do hit like on your way out and subscribe if you are new. Have a blessed night. Stay based. Christ is King. And we will catch you on the next one.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, Baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.